The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. Why it matters on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3, good morning. It's the breakfast huddle. I'm Elliot Danker together with Ryan Huang. It's time now for Why It Matters, and we're now in Phase 2 heightened alert. Singapore, of course, returning to Phase 2 heightened alert. It started on July 22nd. And, you know, I guess most significantly, no dining out. If you're going to visit each other's homes, you can only do it in groups of two. Two unique visitors per day, right? That sort of thing. And it comes as no surprise, really, because when you look back at the developments over the past few weeks, what started as a KTV cluster evolved into Jurong Fishery Port cluster, reports saying that they're both linked. As of yesterday, we had 162 new local cases, most of these cases linked to the Jurong Fishery Port cluster. So what does it mean right now to be in this Phase 2 heightened alert again? What can we expect in terms of the medical developments for this entire situation? On the line with me this morning is Dr. Paul Tambaya, President of the Asia-Pacific Society of Clinical Microbiology and Infection. Dr. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I guess a lot of Singaporeans are really concerned about the situation that we're in. A couple of days ago, I read in a paper our Health Minister, Ong Ye Kung, saying that this latest tightening measure is aimed at buying time in that sense to try and reach the target of two-thirds of the population being fully vaccinated by National Day. That's a couple of weeks away. In your medical opinion, are we on track to get there?
I think we are. I mean, there are strong pushes to get people vaccinated with more slots being made available. Hospitals have started offering vaccinations for their own patients, which is great, especially for those who are worried about their underlying diseases and their risk of complications. I mean, just yesterday I was in clinic and three of my regular patients got vaccinated on the spot after their consultation. So I think that, you know, now the supply issues have been addressed. It's good that we have things like mobile vaccination centers. So hopefully we will reach the target.
Yeah, the mobile vaccination centers are proving very, very helpful, especially for the elderly who have not been vaccinated. Dr. Paul, I mean, what kind of scenario are we looking at, especially with words like, okay, we're going to go into an endemic stage of the virus? I mean, what does that mean? What's the daily scenario? 100, 200 cases per day, but manageable in that sense?
Well, I think the first thing to note is that every pandemic has become endemic. You know, the H1N1 2009 is now just one of the regular seasonal flus. Even the deadly Spanish flu of 1918 mm-hmm. to 1919, I mean, it became the endemic flu from 1920 to 1957. So I think, you know, the minister himself mentioned influenza. So I think what we're looking for is in the future, we're going to have COVID occasionally, just like we have influenza. And, you know, we still have about more than 200 cases of influenza up to the time of the pandemic every day. Most of them were not diagnosed. And we had significant numbers of deaths. But we dealt with it. We monitored influenza. We have, you know, hospitals reporting patients in ICU with influenza. They do surveillance in polyclinics. And we can pick up when new strains of influenza are coming up. So I think that's what we're going to do. We will treat it like influenza. Serious disease causes significant death, especially in the elderly. Mm-hmm. But the big difference is that we have a lot more people vaccinated against COVID than we had against influenza. And I think hospitals also are better prepared in terms of dealing with people with pneumonia. And people will now know you shouldn't go to work when you're ill. You have better hand hygiene. And even the GPs are also going to be better equipped. So things have changed, but it's not, you know, we can't sustain this kind of restrictions for a long time.
Yeah, it's a tough behavioral shift in that sense. I guess in the near future, and one of the things we kind of almost saw was vaccination separation. Initially, it was, I think as of last week, it was two people not vaccinated can sit together. And if you want to sit in groups of five, you have to all show proof of vaccination. That's not happening. That's been put back. But I guess that's going to happen eventually, at least for a couple of months. What kind of considerations do we have to look at before we can get into a phase of vaccination separation other than the two-thirds vaccinated population?
Well, the main consideration is you don't want to be unfair to people who cannot get vaccinated because they're allergic to all the licensed vaccines. And you know, we have precedents. Like, for example, kids who want to go to primary one in our national schools, they have to be vaccinated against measles and diphtheria. And there are a small number of, you know, parents who are dead set against that, so they homeschool their kids. But that's really, really hard, and only the, you know, wealthy can afford to do that. But if there are kids who cannot get the measles vaccine for some reason, they're given an exemption, medical exemption, and they are allowed to go to school. So I think something like that could be done for people who can't receive the COVID vaccines.
We're speaking with Dr. Paul Tumbaya, who is president of the Asia-Pacific Society of Clinical Microbiology and Infection. Dr. Paul, this is purely a curious question of mine. You've got these restrictions which obviously make people want to convince them in that sense to get vaccinated faster, especially the 200,000 elderly who have not done so yet. In terms of convincing them, does it help to split the infections by demographics? I mean, obviously, we don't get that kind of information, but is that useful?
Well, I think it is kind of useful, but ultimately, you know, people make decisions on a very personal level.
Okay.
They don't look at the numbers, and they're not going to be guilted into doing something just because of their demographic. They're going to do it because their friends went for the vaccine and nothing happened to them. So I think that's what's going to happen.
This is a bit of medical law, Dr. Paul, but I'm sure you've had experience with this. And it's the consideration to make vaccination mandatory. There are a certain age group of Singaporeans that say, hey, why don't you just make it mandatory? I mean, I guess maybe we're used to that sort of thing. But there are legal provisions where you can put the COVID-19 disease as a bit of pandemic or an emergency situation where you can make it mandatory. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, if you want to make something mandatory, you have to be convinced that the risk versus benefits are overwhelmingly in favor of the vaccination. Take, for example, the measles vaccine, which I mentioned is mandatory for primary one kids. Mm. You know, there are well-known, in 2020, HSA reported febrile seizures, low platelet counts, allergic reactions, and a whole bunch of other side effects. But overall, the benefit of not having kids with measles in our local schools far outweighs the risk of these side effects. The other thing is that, you know, once you make a vaccine mandatory, there are two things that happen. First, it has to be provided free for all those who cannot afford it. And that's being done right now for the COVID. Second thing is the government is then responsible for any consequences proven to be due to the vaccine. Because, you know, if you force somebody to get the vaccine and something happens to them, then you've got to bear the consequences. Mm. And so far, we have not seen, you know, a huge number of major serious consequences. But I think that's one of the things that's probably weighing on the minds of the government's lawyers.
As usual, Singapore with the pragmatic approach that it's known for. And that's been to our benefit, to be fair. Dr. Paul, I want to talk about the clusters. I mean, it started as a KTV cluster and now it's gone to a Jurong Fishery Port cluster. Looking at the caseload, so last week I spoke to an infectious disease expert and he said last week that he wants to see the caseload go up and then slowly start to come down over the next 2 weeks, because that shows that we are catching these people. The contact tracing is working. With where we're at right now, in your opinion, you know, when can we expect to see the cases start to drop, to feel confident again?
Well, you know, we've already started to see a drop in the KTV-linked cases. Although, again, that's a very marginal population, so it's hard to tell whether that's accurate. But I think it will take a few days before the numbers either plateau or start to turn around. To assess whether contact tracing is working, what we need to do is look at the number of cases detected in quarantine versus the number of cases detected by surveillance. Because if you're picked up when you're in quarantine, you're not going to spread it to anyone. If you're still walking around and, you know, you're only picked up by a mass swabbing exercise, it's quite possible that you may have infected someone else.
Right.
And ultimately, though, the only way to see the cases really drop is through widespread vaccination.
Right.
And we have to do that for people on, even those on extended visit passes, because, you know, that was what was revealed with the KTV clusters. You got people on short-term visit passes that keep getting renewed, and they're interacting with lots of Singaporeans. So I think we really need to look at vaccinating these individuals.
Actually, it can be done logistically right now, right? Like, if you enter the country before you can go out to work, you get vaccinated first.
Yeah, you know, but the trouble is people on short-term visit passes are not supposed to work.
Ah.
But in reality, they are interacting with a lot of people.
Fair point. But this Jurong Fishery Port, you know, trying to ring fence these clusters is a bit different compared with when it was, say, for example, in Tan Tock Seng or even in the schools, because of how many people these citizens interact with.
Yes, that's right. You know, because KTVs and fishery ports, and even the casinos for that matter, have a large floating and mobile population among the visitors, and many of these individuals want to remain anonymous. And these are people who are actually often at the margins of our societies, like the migrant workers in the dorms last year. In the contrast, hospitals staff and visitors and school staff and visitors are all very tightly accounted for. So it's easy to make sure that everybody gets vaccinated and that you can pick up when people are getting sick. So we really need to do something to address these people on the margins, address their concerns. And in particular, you know, if they're afraid to come forward because they think they may be prosecuted for breaking the law, maybe even some kind of amnesty. And that's what we do with sexually transmitted control, infection control in Singapore. And that seems to work.
Right. It is good, or we should actually consider taking it from that point of view, like dealing with a sexually transmitted disease. It goes a long way then.
That's right. So public health, during a period of a crisis, public health needs to trump law enforcement. And people, once they've come forward, they realize that you're not going to prosecute them. Hopefully, they're not going to commit the offences the next time around.
Okay, so I'll give chance in that sense. But I might be putting you on the spot with this next two questions, yeah. Dr. Paul. We keep talking about, okay, get to 70%, two-thirds of the population vaccinated. That seems to be the target where things are going to go well again. But can things go wrong even if you have 70% of the population vaccinated? I mean, would variants, for example, be a spanner in the works?
Well, you know, right now what's happened is that the Delta variant is becoming almost completely dominant. And this is similar to what happened around this time last year when the D614G, which is like the grandfather of the Delta variant, first appeared and just took over the world. And the other strains all completely disappeared. And so what we have right now is children and grandchildren of the D614G. So I'm not so concerned about variants. What I'm concerned about is that there may be yet another hidden population that's missed out by the vaccination efforts and by a lot of the public health efforts. But, you know, it's becoming increasingly likely that we've covered everyone. Okay. But you can never say never.
Okay, so part two of my problem question here is... There's also a lot of talk of, because I liken the mRNA technology behind this vaccine as a bit of like an antivirus for your body, because it teaches your body to fight it, right? So obviously you need like an antivirus update, and that could come in the form of a booster shot. What if we get the same situation next year? Booster shot, people willing to take it, but again, the elderly don't want to take it. So then you have less than 70% of the population not taking the booster shot. Does that create a potential problem?
Well, you know, I think that the vaccines are actually going to be turn out to be more like an operating system rather than an antivirus.
Okay.
And that once you've got a good one, you really don't have to change for a very long time, maybe 10 years. And that's similar to some of the vaccines like MMR for measles, mumps and rubella. That once you've had two shots, it's good for life, unless it's an outbreak. And sometimes you give a third shot. So even the USDA and CDC have said that they don't think that booster shots are going to be necessary. But you're right, there is a possibility that we might need it. But if we do need it, I think we're well on track to getting it, because if you've already had two shots, you're not going to mind getting a third. And basically the mindset has always been in Singapore and elsewhere that vaccines are for kids. So now adults are starting to get vaccinated, then I think it's a big change in mindset. And hopefully all the other adult vaccinations will benefit.
Yeah, we just got to start thinking like how we were when we were 12. Just go get your
That's
BCG
right.
shot.
Exactly.
Don't complain. Been speaking with Dr. Paul Tumbaya, who is President of Asia Pacific Society of Clinical Microbiology and Infection. Dr. Paul, I really appreciate your time this morning. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.